I've had my life threatened. My wife has been threatened. They've threatened to take Janelle, cut her head off.
Nestled among the rolling fields and lush mountainous forests of northeastern Tennessee lies the picturesque town of Mountain City, a place steeped in history and natural beauty. From its early days as a crossroads for Native American trails, to its current status as a vibrant community, Mountain City has evolved while retaining its timeless charm. Today, the town's residents lead lives that are rooted in the rhythms of nature and the traditions of their community. With the Appalachian Mountains serving as a backdrop, there are many places to hike, fish, and camp. Life here moves at an unhurried pace. On the weekends, families gather for picnics and barbecues, while the town comes to life with local festivals and events. From bluegrass concerts to artisan craft fairs, and even the yearly Wainscott Strawberry Festival, there's always something to do in the town of Mountain City, despite its small size. The community is so tight-knit that practically everybody knows one another, if not by name, then at least by sight. Most people in the 2,000-strong community leave their doors unlocked, just in case a neighbour wants to pop over for a cup of coffee or a beer. Among the residents of Mountain City was Brad Osborne, a hard-working employee at Parkdale Mills Textile Park. On the crisp morning of the 31st of January 2012, Brad found himself parked outside the home of his colleague and friend, Billy Payne. The two men had formed a close bond over the years, often carpooling to work from their nearby homes. 36-year-old Billy Payne lived in the white clapboard home on James Davis Lane, alongside his 23-year-old girlfriend, Billie Jean Hayworth, and their 7-month-old son, Tyler. The home belonged to Billy's father, who was affectionately known as Paw Bill in the local community. As the sun began to cast its first golden rays upon the sleepy town, Brad sat in his car outside and waited for Billy to emerge. However, the minutes continued to slip past, and Brad was becoming impatient. He didn't want to be late for work. Brad knew that Billy was inside since his bedroom light was switched on. He beeped his horn to let Billy know that he was there. But still, Billy failed to emerge. After a few moments of hesitation, Brad decided to go and investigate. He strolled around the side of the house towards the rear glass sliding door. He knew that it was rarely left locked. Despite this, Brad opted to knock first. With no response, Brad cautiously pushed open the door and entered. The interior was eerily quiet, save for the persistent blaring of an alarm clock. Proceeding into the living room, Brad called out to Billy repeatedly, yet he received no answer. Brad then reached for the house landline and called Billie Jean's number, hoping for some clarity. However, the phone rang endlessly and Billie Jean never picked up. Unable to discern the whereabouts of Billy and Billie Jean, Brad reasoned that perhaps Paw Bill had taken Billy to work that morning. As he prepared to leave, Brad called out one final time, but the absence of any reply confirmed his suspicions. Brad climbed into his car outside and drove to work alone, expecting to see Billy there.
Barbara.
Yeah.
Before you find out from somebody else, I want you to know I was involved in it. I did it.
What?
Some of it.
Billy Clay Payne was born on the 10th of July, 1975, to Billy Ray Payne and Beverly Duggar Garland. He grew up alongside his younger sister Tracy in Mountain City. Following high school, like many young men in the area, Billy found employment in the textile mills, dedicating long hours to his work ethic, sometimes laboring for up to 12 hours a day. Despite his demanding job, he cherished his time with his friends and family, often gathering for casual get-togethers filled with beer, music, and dancing. However, Billy struggled with prescription painkiller addiction amid the opioid epidemic plaguing Johnson County, eventually seeking treatment to overcome his dependency. Despite his challenges, Billy found joy in life's simple pleasures, indulging in hobbies such as coin collecting and exploring flea markets, yard sales, and auctions. In 2009, he crossed paths with Billie Jean Hayworth, a cleaner at the textile mill, who shared his love for the outdoors and bargain hunting. Billie Jean had been born on the 19th of March 1988 to Carl Dean Hayworth and Martha Pierce Hayworth. She was an avid enthusiast of fishing, hiking, camping and running. The two quickly formed a bond, and before long, Billie Jean moved in with Billy and his father. Their relationship deepened, and by the fall of 2010, they received the news that Billie Jean was pregnant. On the 11th of July the following year, the couple welcomed their son, Tyler, into the world. With the arrival of their new baby, Billy made a conscious effort to prioritize his family over his previous habits of drinking and partying. Instead of heading out for a beer after work, he chose to spend the evenings at home with Billie Jean and Tyler. The young family embraced their new roles as parents, dedicating themselves to providing Tyler with the best possible upbringing. Upon Brad's arrival at work that morning, he was surprised to see that Billy wasn't there. He speculated that there may have been a family emergency, so made a mental note to check on Billy and Billie Jean later that evening after he left work. At around 10 a.m. that same morning, Roy Stevens drove over to Paul Bill's residence to collect his mail. Roy had previously lived in the neighbourhood, and Paul Bill collected the mail that was sent to his old address. He pulled up outside and left his wife Linda in the car, telling her that he would only be gone for a couple of moments. Roy noticed that Billy and Billie Jean's car was still parked outside, so he approached the glass sliding door and knocked. After receiving no reply, he cautiously entered the home and called out, only to be met with silence. Roy proceeded down the hallway, repeatedly calling out to anybody in the house, but it was clear that nobody was there. The alarm clock that Brad had heard earlier in the morning was now silent, and so was the rest of the home. As Roy neared the first bedroom, Billy and Billie Jean's, his eyes were drawn to a red puddle on the floor. As Roy peered into the bedroom, his worst fears were confirmed. Billy lay motionless on the bed, and crimson stained the sheets. Determined to rouse him, Roy grabbed Billy's arms and attempted to shake him awake. It was futile. Billy was evidently deceased. Realizing the gravity of the situation, Roy bolted out of the house, his mind racing with concern for potential dangers lurking within. He was unsure if the killer was still inside, or whether there were more victims. He left in a hurry, but his thoughts were consumed with the safety of Billie Jean and Tyler. He hoped that they were somewhere else, somewhere safe. In a flurry of panic, Roy urged Linda to call 911 while they sought refuge in the car. But Linda didn't have a cell phone, and neither did Roy. This, combined with a sense of duty and hope, propelled Roy to return to the scene. Linda, who was trained in CPR, went with him. In the bedroom, Linda knelt beside Billy, her trained eyes scanning for any flicker of life. Yet the chill of death pervaded the room. Billy's skin was ice cold. Surveying the scene, Linda's gaze fell upon the telltale signs of violence. Billy's face looked like it had been brutally beaten, but it was clear that that wasn't what had killed him. Linda saw a large gaping wound on his neck, and then a hole underneath his left eye. As Linda hurriedly relayed the grisly discovery to the 911 operator, Roy was alerted to a faint noise emanating from another room. He pushed open the door to a second bedroom, and was met by a scene that was equally as horrifying. Sprawled upon the floor lay Billie Jean, her lifeless body surrounded by a pool of blood. Nestled in her arms was the fragile figure of 7-month-old Tyler. There was blood on his baby grow and caked on his face. His face was red and blotchy, as if he'd been crying. With a heart heavy with dread, Roy rushed to Billie Jean's side. His eyes strained to discern any signs of life in Tyler. To his immense relief, however, the toddler stirred and awoke from his slumber. All of the blood on him had come from his mother. Roy quickly bundled Tyler up and placed him in an area of safety, away from the blood-stained remnants of his parents' lives. Roy then turned his attention to Billie Jean, but much like Billie, it was clear that she too was dead. There was a large hole in her head, and her once vibrant features were obscured by blood and tissue. Roy and Linda waited outside with Tyler as detectives arrived at the scene, followed by forensic experts. They cordoned off the home with crime scene tape and began their investigation. There was no sign of forced entry, but since the back sliding glass door was always left unlocked, this wasn't much of a surprise. However, there was also no sign of any struggle, which was perplexing to detectives. There were several valuable items left out in the open, but the home wasn't ransacked. It was clear that this wasn't a robbery gone wrong. Since Billie was discovered in bed in just his underwear, detectives theorized that he was still in bed when the killer arrived. As for Billie Jean, she was in Tyler's bedroom. Based on the scene, it appeared as though the killer had quietly crept into the home and then ambushed Billie and Billie Jean. Detectives quickly established that they had been killed sometime after 5:30 a.m. Billie's father, Paul Bill, told detectives that he had left their home that morning at 5:30 a.m. to go to work. Before he left, he saw that Billie Jean had gotten up to feed Tyler. Then around an hour later, Brad arrived at the home, but he didn't see nor hear the couple. Detectives believe that Billie and Billie Jean were killed at some point in this hour-long time frame, but they struggled to find a suspect. There was no DNA left behind, no fingerprints and no shell casings. It quickly became clear that this wasn't going to be such an easy case to solve, at least without anybody coming forward with information. Over at the medical examiner's office, Dr. Karen Klein Paramovich found that Billie had been shot once under his left eye. He had also sustained a deep slash wound to the neck, but the pathologist believed that the gunshot wound had happened first. Billie had no defensive wounds, but there was a shoulder wound that might have been caused by an overshot of a weapon. It looked as though the first shot had missed Billie before the second shot struck him underneath the eye. Both of these injuries had contributed to his death. The manner of death was homicide. Billie Jean had sustained a single gunshot wound to the head, and her manner of death was homicide as well. During the search of the home, detectives came across several weapons, something that was common in homes in the area, but testing showed that none of these were the murder weapons. Billie and Billie Jean had been killed with either a .38 caliber or 9mm handgun. By that afternoon, the news of the murders had spread through the small mountain town like wildfire. People were understandably shocked and scared. Murders rarely happened in Mountain City, especially murders that horrific. In fact, Sheriff Mike Reese referred to it as the worst murder he had ever seen in his career, but added, "The only good thing to come out of this is, hopefully, the child is too young to remember any of it." Billie Jean's mother pleaded on television for the killer to come forward, or for somebody to identify them. The murder investigation was assigned to Johnson County Chief Deputy Joe Woodard and Tennessee Bureau Investigation Special Agent Scott Lott. After the crime scene was analysed and documented, detectives began combing the neighbourhood in search of witnesses. However, they couldn't find a single person who saw or heard anything out of the ordinary that morning. By all accounts, it was just a routine Tuesday morning in the sleepy mountain town. Nobody had heard any screaming, nor had they seen any unfamiliar people or vehicles. Some of the neighbours mentioned how Paw Bill's dog barked whenever a stranger came to the home. But that morning, nobody had heard the dog barking. Detectives began to speculate that the killer was somebody that the family knew, but they were stumped at a motivation. At least at first, anyway. Based on the crime scene, detectives had already begun to theorise that the murders were revenge murders, but they needed to figure out who might have had a vendetta against the couple. During the search of the home, detectives had come across a meth pipe and some prescription medication. They also came across a small quantity of methamphetamine and a credit card which they suspected had been used to make a line to snort the drugs. Some friends of the couple knew that they sold prescription medication on the side to earn an extra bit of cash. In fact, just the day before the murders, one of Billie Jean's friends had paid the couple a visit. Billie Jean had told Lindsay Thomas that they had just received a fresh batch of pills that they were ready to sell. Lindsay suggested to detectives that the murders could have been a drug deal gone wrong, and it certainly seemed like a plausible scenario. While methamphetamine had been found in the home along with the credit card, neither Billy nor Billie Jean had the drug in their system. Detectives wondered whether Billie Jean could have been selling the drug to somebody that morning in Tyler's bedroom. But then something went wrong, causing the buyer to lash out and kill both her and Billy. Two of Billy's friends, Calvin Williams and Matthew Richardson, had spoken to Billy the night before the murders. They admitted to detectives that they had bought some medication from Billy that he had gotten at a Suboxone clinic, and that Billy sometimes sold pills. The two men had arranged to meet with Billy, but the night before the murders, Billy had texted them and cancelled because he was tired. But while detectives were looking into this angle, they received a far more promising tip. According to Billie Jean's family, she had recently experienced online harassment from a woman named Janelle Potter. The interaction began, innocently enough, in 2008, when Billie Jean received a friend request from Janelle on Facebook. Initially, it appeared that Janelle sought companionship, perhaps reaching out in her isolation due to her lifelong health struggles. Janelle had been born with an auditory disability and learning challenges, rendering her unable to hear until the age of 2 or 3. Throughout her childhood, she underwent speech therapy and participated in special education programs to address her needs. Out of 100 children, 999 would perform better than Janelle, and she had an IQ of 72, which is 3 levels below the average person. Then when Janelle was in high school, she sustained a brain injury after being attacked by a classmate. This only magnified her intellectual disabilities. Despite being in her late 20s, she maintained a strong attachment to her parents, Buddy and Barbara Potter, surpassing the typical threshold where children seek independence. The family had moved from Pennsylvania to Mountain City back in 2004. The Potter family was characterized as devoutly religious and fervent supporters of gun rights. On the back of Buddy's car, he proudly displayed a bumper sticker approving of the Second Amendment. Barbara had previously held a job at HP, while Buddy, a Vietnam War veteran and former Marine, was forced to retire due to a debilitating injury. Are you still struggling with stress and finding it tough to stay focused, even though you vowed to tackle it as your New Year's resolution? Well, Truvaga might just be the game changer you've been looking for. Truvaga is a handheld device designed to stimulate something called the vagus nerve. And what does stimulating the vagus nerve do? It works wonders for your overall health and wellness. By giving your vagus nerve a gentle nudge, Truvaga helps rebalance and strengthen your nervous system. The result? reduced stress levels, sharper focus, a brighter mood, and even better sleep. Truvaga sessions are quick and customizable, clocking in at just 2 minutes each. That means you can easily fit one into your morning routine and another before bedtime. With 350 sessions included, you've got enough for about 6 months of twice daily use. Oh, and did I mention it's entirely drug-free and super simple to use? No need for any fancy apps or phones. Just pick it up, press a button, and you're good to go. So if you're ready to experience the perks of better health and wellness without the hassle, give Truvaga a try. Visit Truvaga at truvaga.com and enter the promo code Morbidology to enhance your wellness journey. Support this podcast and receive $15 off. That is truvaga.com. Check out promo code Morbidology. The Potter family were known as blow-ins in the close-knit mountain community. Plus, there was something strange about the Potter family. Buddy often told anybody who would listen that he was involved with the CIA, but people had their doubts. He was now disabled, and because of his ailments he needed an oxygen tank with him at all times, just to be able to breathe. Despite being in her late 20s, Janelle came across as much younger. She loved cuddly toys, and her bedroom looked like it belonged to an 8-year-old, as opposed to a fully grown woman. Whenever she went out with her parents in the town, she greeted people she didn't know with a hug, and talked to them as though she had known them for years. Most people found it to be off-putting, even more so when they got back home and found that Janelle had added them on Facebook. Social media had provided Janelle with a semblance of connection to the outside world, offering a lifeline to interaction beyond the confines of her strict parents. Prior to befriending Billie Jean on Facebook, Janelle's social interactions were largely confined to her family circle. However, a chance encounter at the local pharmacy altered the trajectory of her social life. Tracy Greenwell, the cashier at the pharmacy, recognized Janelle as a member of the Potter family and empathized with her social struggles. Recognizing Janelle's yearning for companionship, Tracy extended a hand of friendship. The two women exchanged contact information, forging a bond that blossomed into regular hangouts. Through Tracy's connections, Janelle found herself integrated into a broader social circle, including Billy Payne, Tracy's brother, and Jamie Lynn Curd, their second cousin. Jamie and Billy worked together at the textile park, and they were like friends more than second cousins, often drinking beers together at the end of the workday. Jamie hadn't graduated high school, but he got his GED and lived with his parents. He had no specialized training in computers, but often helped people out around the town with any computer issues they were having. Tracy decided she would set Janelle up with Jamie, and despite their differences, including an 8-year age gap, romance blossomed. Much like Janelle, Jamie had lived something of a sheltered life. He had been his parents' carer, and despite being in his mid-30s, he hadn't had a girlfriend yet. But Janelle made sure to keep the relationship hidden from her strict parents. In Tracy, Janelle found not only a friend, but also a gateway to a world of social interaction and even romance. Despite the facade of stability in her relationship with Jamie, Janelle had a crush on another man, Billy Payne. From the moment she laid eyes on him, Janelle felt an attraction towards Billy. However, she was aware that he was in a committed relationship with Billie Jean. Then when she learned that Billy and Billie Jean were expecting Tyler, she was furious. As Jamie continued to frequent the Potter household under the guise of computer repairs, Buddy and Barbara had grown fond of him. They weren't aware that he was in a relationship with their daughter, but they developed a friendship of sorts. Despite Janelle's attraction towards Billy, her relationship with Jamie appeared to be flourishing. He even purchased her a cell phone so that they could chat more frequently. Things seemed to be good for Janelle, But one day when she logged on to Facebook, she saw that she had received nasty comments from an anonymous person. They told her that she was ugly, that nobody liked her, and that she deserved to be raped. After Janelle added Billie Jean on Facebook, it became clear that she didn't want to be friends. After she was confronted with the negative comments on her Facebook, Janelle jumped to the conclusion that they originated from Billie Jean and her friend Lindsay Thomas. Upon Billie Jean's acceptance of the friend request, Janelle initiated a campaign of harassment, reaching out to mutual friends on Facebook and labelling Billie Jean and Lindsay as mean girls. Accusations of irresponsible parenting and drug use followed, escalating into hateful messages where Janelle expressed wishes that both women and Billie would die. As the vitriol intensified, it dawned on Billie, Billie Jean and Lindsay that the hate comments attributed to them were, in fact, concocted by Janelle herself. She had resorted to creating fake profiles to send abusive messages to herself, and then falsely accused them of the harassment. One afternoon, Janelle saved pictures from Billie Jean and Lindsay's Facebook profiles and reposted them on her own account alongside derogatory comments. Janelle also took to a local forum to badmouth Billie, cautioning others to steer clear of him. Feeling uneasy, both Billie Jean and Lindsay were perplexed by Janelle's behaviour. Eventually, Lindsay managed to track down Janelle's phone number, and she confronted her directly, urging her to cease the harassment. However, Janelle feigned ignorance, denying any involvement, and insisting that she hadn't posted anything about them on Facebook. She said that her Facebook account must have been hacked. Despite Lindsay's intervention, the situation escalated. Lindsay began receiving numerous phone calls daily, sometimes up to 20. Each time, greeted by nothing but heavy breathing. The phone calls had come from the Potter household, as Janelle hadn't attempted to hide the phone number. As tensions mounted online, Janelle took drastic action and contacted the police, alleging that someone had vandalized her family home by throwing a rock through the window. On the rock were inscribed the names Billie and Billie Jean. Meanwhile, Billie, Billie Jean and Lindsay had removed Janelle from their Facebook friends list, attempting to distance themselves from the escalating conflict. However, this decision only led to further complications. In an unusual turn of events, Body contacted the police to report that his daughter had been deleted on Facebook by the trio. During the conversation with police, Body made bizarre claims about his involvement with the CIA, and his possession of weapons. Since no actual crime had occurred, the police were unable to intervene, as unfriending somebody on Facebook isn't grounds for police involvement. Janelle's reaction to the situation was notably extreme, fueled by the overprotectiveness of her parents, Buddy and Barbara. Eventually, in May of 2011, Lindsay pressed harassment charges against Janelle. Despite the legal proceedings, the court case was repeatedly delayed, and Janelle was ultimately acquitted due to a lack of evidence linking her to the harassing phone calls. However, during the court hearing, Billie Jean testified against Janelle, providing evidence of the malicious content that she had posted on Facebook. After learning about the confrontations between Janelle and Billie and Billie Jean, detectives paid a visit to the Potter family. They recorded the interview with Buddy, Barbara, and Janelle.
What we're doing right now is investigating the Yellow House. Very serious matter.
Everybody always points fingers at us for something.
Well, no, there ain't nobody pointing their finger.
Do you know of anybody that would hurt them, want to hurt them?
Hell, actually, I don't. I feel bad about the situation because I didn't want no harm on them.
They denied any knowledge of the murders, but Janelle did tell detectives about the online interactions that she had.
They did harass me in my driveway, on our property, and then yesterday morning when I got on Facebook is when I found out. And, I mean, I'm sorry it happened, but I mean, that's all I can tell you is they have been harassing the living.
Janelle had a theory as to why they were harassing Kerr.
It came out to be a jealousy thing. They said I was too pretty.
The topic then turned to Jimmy, but Buddy and Barbara still had no clue that their daughter was romantically involved with him.
He's just a friend. We've been friends for years.
He's friend of our family.
Yeah,
I know. He's friend of all of us to me.
Jay, you kind of like your boyfriend?
No. No, he's just a really good friend.
Does he want to be your boyfriend?
Not that I know of.
The detectives didn't really learn anything else from the interview, so they decided to make contact with Jimmy. Much like the Potters, he denied any knowledge about the murders of Billy and Billie Jean, but detectives were suspicious. They decided to ask him to take a polygraph examination, something which is not admissible in court due to their lack of reliability. During the examination, Jamie maintained that he didn't know who was responsible for the murders of Billy and Billie Jean, but the polygraph indicated deception. The detectives pushed Jamie for more information, but he stuck to his story that he didn't know anything about the murders. But then he had a bizarre question for them.
Is the CIA here?
CIA?
No.
No.
Jamie said to detectives that he had been texting with a man named Chris, who told him that he was in the CIA and had been tasked with protecting Janelle. In a sudden turn of events, Jamie implicated Buddy, Janelle's father, as the man behind the murders. Detectives had already interacted with Buddy and his physical condition, reliant on an oxygen tank for survival, seemed to not align with the capabilities of a murderer who could swiftly execute a crime without leaving any evidence behind. Determined to uncover the truth, the detectives devised a plan. They asked Jamie to place a call to Buddy from the police station, hoping to elicit further information that could shed light on the case. Jamie reluctantly agreed to cooperate.
Well, they're holding fingers.
Oh, Jamie, Christmas.
You got rid of everything as from Bill, didn't
you?
Uh-huh. Okay. That makes me feel a lot better.
Yeah.
Jimmy was arrested at the police station while Buddy was arrested at home. He was brought to the police station to be interrogated. Buddy denied any involvement, but the detectives weren't buying his story. Hours of relentless questioning eventually wore down Buddy's resolve, leading to an emotional breakdown and tears. Sensing a breakthrough in their investigation, the detectives permitted Buddy to make a phone call to his wife, Barbara.
Barbara.
Yeah.
Before you find out from somebody else, I want you to know I was involved in it and I did it.
What?
Some of it.
On the 6th of February, Jamie Lee Curd and Buddy Potter were charged with two counts of first-degree murder. With them behind bars, detectives searched the Potter family's home. They came across numerous weapons in almost every single room in the house, from handguns and knives to AK-47s. In Buddy's truck, they found 5 38 caliber bullets that looked similar to the ones used in the shooting. Then in the living room, they came across photographs of Billie Jean that had been taken from her Facebook account and then printed out. On one of them, somebody had scribbled the word bitch. As they were collected, Barbara rushed into the room, grabbed them, and began ripping them up. As the investigation progressed, detectives stumbled upon garbage bags filled with shredded documents. Through meticulous effort, they managed to piece together the shredded documents, revealing a trove of strange emails exchanged between the Potter family and an individual named Chris, who allegedly worked for the CIA. In these emails, Chris claimed to be engaged in intelligence work and alleged that Billy and Billie Jean were conspiring to harm Janelle. Similar emails were also sent to Jamie, one of which ominously threatened violence. "They will be so sorry. I will kill. It's coming." The detectives were struck by the unprofessional tone of the emails, with one message reading, They can't stand it that Janelle is so pretty and so truthful, and just a great person. Determined to unravel the mystery behind these communications, the detective seized the Potter family's computer. Upon investigation, they made a startling discovery. The emails from Chris were actually being sent from the family's own computer. In fact, the string of emails had been coming from Janelle's own email address, but they were all signed off with Chris. Detectives quickly realized that Janelle had been fabricating these emails herself, masquerading as a CIA agent in an effort to portray herself as a victim being protected. As details of the motivation behind the murder were made public, people were absolutely stunned. Sheriff Reese said of Janelle, "Apparently she was on the internet all the time. That was her life. When she was a friend with someone on Facebook and they removed her, she went ballistic. This is just a senseless thing. That's no reason to kill people." Public outcry intensified, with many demanding Janelle's arrest. However, it was Barbara who ultimately faced legal repercussions. She was arrested on the 24th of September and charged with tampering with evidence, specifically in relation to the destruction of the images of Billie Jean. In August the next year, however, both Janelle and Barbara were indicted with two counts of first-degree murder and one count of conspiracy to commit first-degree murder. The charges came just in time for Buddy's murder trial, which began on the 7th of October 2013. During the trial's opening statements, prosecutor Dennis Brooks wasted no time in laying out the prosecution's case. He said that both Buddy and Jamie had carried out the murders, and that they were motivated to do it because of Janelle. He stated, "We're going to show you that you're in the midst of someone who was trained and cold-blooded enough to do that kind of act." The prosecutor said that Buddy became angry after Billy and Billie Jean removed Janelle as a Facebook friend. He posed the question, "What was their great sin? What did they do wrong? They chose not to be friends with Janelle Potter." Prosecutor Brooks then showed some of the emails that Janelle had sent, claiming to be a CIA agent named Chris. When defense attorney Randy Fallon presented his opening arguments, he refuted the entire case the prosecution had built. He confidently said, "There were no fingerprints. There won't be bloodstains. There's no DNA." A number of people testified about the crime scene before detectives testified about the evidence found at the Potter home. Chief Deputy Joe Woodard spoke about Barbara ripping up the photographs of Billie Jean. Jerry Weinberger, who worked at the local grocery store, told the jury that Buddy once said he would put a bullet in Billy's head if he ever got the chance. Linda Stevens also described an earlier altercation between Billie Jean, Barbara and Janelle. The mother and daughter were screaming in her face. She just stood there looking stunned. The jury also got to hear the interrogation of Buddy and the phone calls he made to Barbara when he admitted to being involved in the murders. The defense sought to cast doubt on the prosecution's case by calling three witnesses who testified about Billy's history with selling prescription medication. However, they all said that by no means was it an operation. It was just a way to make some extra cash on the side to provide for his family. The jury ultimately found Buddy Potter guilty on two counts of first-degree murder. The judge then sentenced him to two life sentences, but he needed to still determine whether they would run consecutively or concurrently at a later date. That date rolled around on the 29th of October. Billy and Billie Jean's family were there to provide victim impact statements. Billy's mother, Beverly Garland, described him as a wonderful son who was kind to every single person that he met. Janine, Billie Jean's sister, said that there was no justification for what Buddy had done, and said that her nephew would grow up without knowing his parents. Judge John Carey Blackwood said that he couldn't think of anybody who would shoot a mother while holding her child. He then sentenced Buddy to two consecutive life sentences. After After Buddy was convicted, it was announced that Jamie, Janelle and Barbara would be standing trial together. This was then changed, and only Janelle and Barbara would be standing trial together, while Jamie would be standing trial alone. By the 3rd of May 2015, a jury had been selected for Janelle and Barbara's trial, and proceedings began. The prosecution argued that both Janelle and Barbara encouraged Buddy to kill Billy and Billie Jean, and suggested that maybe Barbara was in on the fake emails that Janelle was sending. The defence, however, implied that the family's computer had been hacked by Jamie, and it was him who had sent those emails, not Janelle or Barbara. While the defence suggested the emails could have come from Jamie, it was revealed during trial that Janelle hadn't even concealed her email address when pretending to be Chris. She sent them from her own personal email, but signed them off with the name Chris. In one email to Jamie, she had written, "I wish I could kill them, but right now I can't." In another, she had written, "I hope that Bill and them get what's coming to them." Jamie responded, "I just want Janelle happy." In another email from Barbara to Chris, she had written, "I wish they'd just break in and I'd have the pleasure of shooting them. Love, Barbara." The emails back and forth were in abundance, and they were sent in the months leading up to the murders. They were all from Janelle's email, but all had been signed off with the name Chris. Nobody in the family nor Jamie thought to question why the emails were coming from Janelle's own email address. In a further email, Barbara had written, "Billy is a satanic, mean, manipulating liar, and she has him right where she wants him." Barbara had also threatened, "We've had enough and we want peace, and no one here wants to kill anyone, but we will." Strangely, Barbara referred to Chris as her son in the emails, while Chris called her mom. It was clear that both Barbara and Janelle had wanted Billy and Billie Jean dead. There was also evidence that they knew the murders were being carried out. At 4:40 a.m. on the morning of the murders, Janelle had emailed Jamie, "I love you. I would not take your cell with you in the morning, love." She then sent another which read, "I love you. Text me ASAP when you get back." As for Barbara, she had emailed herself a link in the lead up to the murders. It was an article which questioned, "Can God forgive a murderer?" Jamie then took the stand as a prosecution witness, recounting the emails that were sent by Chris. Despite the correspondence originating from Janelle's email address, Jamie admitted he was convinced of Chris's existence. Chris had explained his aversion to phone calls, claiming he had a phobia of talking on the phone. Despite Billy's warnings that Chris was likely a fabrication of Janelle's, Jamie remained steadfast in his belief that he was real. Jamie's testimony then shifted to the events preceding the murders. He claimed that Buddy had asked him to drop him off near Billy's home the night before, pick him up later without questions asked. However, on the morning of the murders, Buddy picked up Jamie, and they parked near the church adjacent to Billy's home. Outside Billy's home, Buddy handed Jamie a gun, but Jamie said, "I can't kill nobody." Buddy told him that he wouldn't need to. He just needed to stand at the door. Jamie said he stood at the door while Buddy went into the main bedroom. He heard Billy say, "What the hell?" followed by a single gunshot. Jamie said that he then saw Billie Jean come down the hallway. Buddy came out of the bedroom and stared at Jamie, and he admitted to pointing in the direction she went. She was clearly trying to reach Tyler in his nursery and escape. Jamie said he went inside the home and saw Billy on the bed covered in blood. That was when he heard another gunshot. The prosecutor showed Jamie a photograph of Billy dead on the bed and asked him how he felt about it. He responded, "Bad, horrible. He was like a brother. He was my friend." He said that he felt as though he had been manipulated by the entire Potter family. According to Jamie, Buddy had told him that he was in the CIA and said that they would have their backs. He also told him that Chris was very much real but even testified during the murder trial, and he admitted to killing Billy.
It wasn't planned to kill him, but I did. Right now, her and my daughter both know that I did this.
He claimed that it was Jamie who killed Billy Jean.
10, 12 seconds after my gun went off, I heard another shot. I was coming out of the room. I got right to the door, and Kurt went past me flying like a bolt of lightning.
But he said that the murders weren't planned, likening it to some kind of accident.
Did you accidentally slit his throat?
No, sir. I did that on purpose.
In the end, both Barbara and Janelle Potter were found guilty on two counts of first-degree murder and conspiracy to commit first-degree murder. Barbara was also found guilty of tampering with evidence. Both women were immediately handed life sentences. Outside of court, Billy's mother Beverly said through tears, "It was like tons lifted off of me. It was just like you're sitting there on pins and needles, but it's finally justice for Billy and Billie Jean. They got justice for them. It's just like we can breathe now, but we're still hurting." The only person left to face trial was Jamie Curd, but he ultimately reached a plea agreement in which he would serve 25 years in prison. And in 2021, Barbara was granted a new trial after a judge ruled her attorney, who had also represented Buddy, had a conflict of interest by representing them both. However, Barbara rejected a new trial, and instead she too reached a plea agreement. She was then resentenced to 25 years in prison. The juxtaposition of two lives could not have been more stark. Billy Payne and Billie Jean Hayworth were embarking on a promising new chapter, striving to build a better life for their young family, while Janelle Potter's envy and resentment festered into a dangerous obsession. As Billy curbed his vices and resolved to create a brighter future, Janelle, who was consumed by jealousy, unleashed a torrent of digital torment upon the couple. In her virtual realm, Janelle orchestrated a relentless campaign of harassment, determined to undermine the happiness of Billy and Billie Jean. But her vindictive online assaults soon transcended mere cyberbullying, culminating with Billy and Billie Jean dead, and Tyler an orphan. Well, besties, that is it for this episode of Morbidology. As always, thank you so much for listening, and I'd like to say a massive thank you to my new supporters up on Patreon, Jabubi, Numia, and Allison. You can join Morbidology up on Patreon for as little as $1 a month. In exchange for your support, I upload ad-free and early release episodes, bonus episodes of Morbidology Plus, behind the scenes, and I also send out a handwritten thank you card along with some cool merch such as stickers, pins, badges, fridge magnets, and t-shirts. There are absolutely no obligations up on Patreon, and you can cancel your subscription at any time. If you'd like to support Morbidology in another way, please consider leaving me a rating and review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever else you may be listening. I really do appreciate the feedback and all of the support. Remember to check us out at morbidology.com for more information about this episode and to read some true crime articles. Until next time, take care of yourselves, stay safe, and have an amazing week.